Good afternoon, everybody. I wish you all a very happy Sabbath. A few weeks back, Carl Kester presented a character study sermon on King Jehoshaphat, pointing out the lessons we could learn from his life. Today, I'd like to do something similar with another Old Testament king who shares a family lineage to Jehoshaphat. There's a significant amount written in the Bible about this particular king, but there are facts and lessons from his life that often seem to get overlooked. I'll start by presenting some of the interesting facts, some of which you've probably heard before, and some of which you may have glossed over. And we'll see how many of these facts I have to present before you can guess who it is I'm talking about. Who is this mystery king? Fact number one, he had many siblings. Two, he had more than one wife. Three, he had sons and daughters. His first three facts probably don't narrow it down too much. Number four will help a little. Four, he reigned as king for 40 years. Five, he had famous great-grandparents, about whom much is written in the Bible. Six, he accomplished a lot of things that were pleasing to God. Seven, he did some things that were definitely not pleasing to God. Eight, he ordered the killing of a good man. He was guilty of murder. Nine, there were times when his family could be considered very dysfunctional. And 10, he had a strong interest in construction work on the temple. If you think you might know who this mystery king is, now consider two more facts. 11, both his grandfather and grandmother on his father's side of the family were mass murderers. The same grandmother was the only queen to rule over ancient Israel or Judah. The first 10 facts that I presented might have led you to assume that I was referring to King David, because all these facts do apply to David. And I did that intentionally, partly for entertainment value, and partly because a little later I want to compare and contrast some important character traits that separate David from this other king. Because as much as he had in common with David, this other king had some serious character flaws. A fatal flaw, in fact, that ended up costing him his life. Since I still haven't identified this other king, let's fill in a little more about his family history. At least two and probably three of his eight great-grandparents are fairly well known from accounts in the Bible. King Jehoshaphat of Judah was one of the great-grandparents, and King Ahab of Israel was the second. Ahab's wife, the infamously wicked Baal worshiper Jezebel, was probably the third great-grandparent, but the Bible doesn't specifically say that. It does seem reasonable, though, when we put together a few facts that can be determined. One, our mystery king's grandmother was a woman named Athaliah. Two, Athaliah was the daughter of Ahab. Three, Ahab's wife was Jezebel. And four, Jezebel and Athaliah definitely shared personality traits that could connect them as mother and daughter. Both were evil, manipulative Baal worshippers. So Jezebel was probably the mother of Athaliah, our mystery king's grandmother. And who was grandmother Athaliah married to? That is, who was the corresponding grandfather of our mystery king? His name was Jehoram, who happened to be the son of King Jehoshaphat of Judah. Jehoshaphat, you might remember, was a relatively good king of Judah. The Bible said he did what was right in the sight of the Lord. But when he died, his son Jehoram became king, and Jehoram was bad. Jehoram had other wives besides Athaliah, but it was Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab, who helped influence him to do evil in the sight of the Lord. I'm doing an abbreviated, paraphrased version of the accounts recorded in both 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles, kind of going back and forth. But after becoming king, Jehoram renewed pagan worship in Judah. And to prevent any challenges to his rulership, he murdered all 6 of his brothers and many of the other leading figures in the nation. But he only reigned for 8 years, and because he'd forsaken God, it was a very troubled reign. God caused the Philistines and the Arabians to attack Jehoram's house, and they carried away all his possessions, some of his wives, and all but the youngest of his sons. It appears that they did not take away his wife Athaliah, though. God also inflicted Jehoram with an incurable intestinal disease that caused him a very painful death when his intestines fell out. When Jehoram died, his youngest son Ahaziah was made king. But Ahaziah was guided by his wicked mother Athaliah, and his reign was a disaster. It only lasted 1 year. In fact, at the advice of his mother, Ahaziah joined his uncle, the king of Israel, in a war against Syria. And it resulted in Ahaziah's death. Ahaziah's uncle and father, by the way, were both named Jehoram. In other words, Athaliah had both a brother named Jehoram and a husband named Jehoram. And they were not the same person. When Athaliah heard of her son's death, she resolved that there would be no heir to the throne of Judah from the line of David. So she ordered the murder of all of her grandsons and established herself as the queen of Judah. However, unbeknownst to Athaliah, one of those grandsons was secretly rescued from the slaughter, and his name was Joash, our mystery king, and the focus of the message today. Before we go on, though, let's pause a moment. I want to interject that if you study into 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles on your own, things can get a little confusing because there were 3 different kings of Judah who shared the same name as 3 kings of Israel. And they all lived in the same general 60-year time frame. Not only that, there were alternate versions of some of those names. As I already mentioned, there were 2 Jehorams. There was Jehoram, king of Judah, whose wife was Athaliah, and there was Jehoram, the king of Israel, whose sister was the same Athaliah. And both Jehorams were also known as Joram, J-O-R-A-M. Then there were 2 Ahaziahs. There was Ahaziah, the king of Judah, the son of Athaliah, but there was also Ahaziah, the king of Israel, who was an older brother of both Jehoram of Israel and his sister Athaliah. And if all that weren't enough, Ahaziah of Judah is identified in one place as Jehoahaz, which happens to be the same name of still another king of Israel. Finally, there were 2 Joashes. There was Joash, the king of Judah, who we're focusing on today, and there was Joash, king of Israel. Both of them were also known as Jehoash, J-E-H-O-A-S-H. And we might also note that the last 3 years of the reign of Joash of Judah overlapped the first 3 years of Joash of Israel. Anyway, I didn't want to confuse those of you who had vague memories of these names in a different context and might have gotten distracted trying to sort it all out. I almost need a chart to do it. Again, the focus of my message today is on Joash, or Jehoash, of Judah. Joash is our mystery king. As I mentioned earlier, when Joash was only a year old, his father, King Ahaziah, was killed, and his evil grandmother, Athaliah, sent assassins to murder his brothers so that she could seize rulership and become queen of Judah. Joash was rescued from the slaughter by his aunt Jehosheba, who hid him and his nurse in a bedroom and later secretly took him to the temple where she and her husband, Jehoiada, high priest, took care of him for 6 years. And in case you're wondering, 2 Kings 11 says that Jehosheba was Jehoram's daughter and Ahaziah's sister, but does not say that Athaliah was her mother. And Jehosheba was probably the daughter of one of Jehoram's other wives, so no connection to Athaliah probably. Now, when Joash was 7 years old, Jehosheba's husband, the high priest Jehoiada, orchestrated a plan to establish Joash as the rightful king of Judah. And when Athaliah objected, she was put to death, and nobody mourned her. Let's turn to 2 Chronicles 24. 2 Chronicles 24:1, Joash was 7 years old when he became king, and he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Zibiah of Beersheba. And Joash did what was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. Jehoiada was a very good influence on Joash and probably gave him a lot of wise advice. And when Joash was young, probably made a lot of wise decisions for him. Verse 3, and Jehoiada took two wives for him. That, though, might not have been one of the wise decisions. Continuing on, and he, Joash, had sons and daughters. Verse 4, now it happened that after this, that Joash set his heart on repairing the house of the Lord. After years of Baal worship that were encouraged and promoted by Queen Athaliah, the temple had fallen into serious disrepair. Out away from Jerusalem, there were still high places, places of pagan worship that had not been torn down, and the people were using these for worship and to offer sacrifices. So Joash wanted to turn the focus to the true God at his temple and away from the pagan shrines. So verse 5, then he gathered the priests and the Levites and said to them, go out to the cities of Judah and gather from all Israel money to repair the house of your God from year to year, and see that you do it quickly. Let's fix up the temple and give people reason to come there. Hopefully it'll remind them of the true God that they're supposed to be worshiping and serving. However, the rest of verse 5 says, the Levites did not do it quickly. We don't know exactly when Joash made the decree, but the account written in 2 Kings 12:6 says that by the 23rd year of King Joash, the priests had still not repaired the damages of the temple. So King Joash, or Jehoash here it's written, called Jehoiada the priest and the other priests and said to them, why haven't you repaired the damages in the temple? I'll go back to 2 Chronicles 24, verse 6, and kind of repeat a little bit here. So the king called Jehoiada the chief priest and said to him, why have you not required the Levites to bring in from Judah and from Jerusalem the collection, according to the commandment of Moses, the servant of the Lord, and the assembly of Israel, for the tabernacle of witness? Took money to make the repairs. For the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, my grandmother, had broken into the house of God and had also presented all the dedicated things of the house of the Lord to the Baals. Then at the command, they made a chest. 2 Kings says that Jehoiada bored a hole in the lid to make sort of a collection box and set it outside at the gate of the house of the Lord. I'm in verse 9 of 2 Chronicles 24. And they made a proclamation throughout Judah and Jerusalem to bring to the Lord the collection that Moses, the servant of God, had imposed on Israel in the wilderness. Then all the leaders and all the people rejoiced, brought their contributions, put them in the chest until all had given. So it was at that time that the chest was brought to the king the king's officials by the hand of the Levites. And when they saw that there was much money, the king's scribe and high priest officer came and emptied the chest and took it and returned to its place. Thus they did, day by day, gathering money in abundance to pay for the work on the temple. Verse 12, the king and Jehoiada gave it to those who did the work of the service of the house of the Lord, and they hired masons and carpenters to repair the house of the Lord, and also those who worked in iron and bronze to restore the house of the Lord. So the workmen labored, and the work was completed by them. They restored the house of God to its original condition and reinforced it. Verse 14, when they had finished, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada. They made from it articles for the house of the Lord, articles for serving and offering, spoons and vessels of gold and silver. They offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada. Things were going well. Joash was ruling well. Godly worship had been restored. But now we come to a turning point event that puts Joash's character to the test and ends up exposing a fatal flaw in his character. Verse 15, but Jehoiada grew old and was full of days, and he died. He was 130 years old when he died. And they buried him in the city of David among the kings, a place of honor, because he had done good in Israel, both toward God and his house. Now, after the death of Jehoiada, the leaders of Judah came and bowed down to the king, and the king listened to them. Joash came under the influence of some shady characters. Verse 18, therefore they left the house of the Lord God of their fathers and served wooden images and idols. Instead of coming to the temple to worship, they went back to worshiping where the pagans did. Continuing verse 18, and wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem because of their trespass. Yet he sent prophets to them to bring them back to the Lord, and they testified against them. Prophets gave them a warning, but they would not listen. Then the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, not the same Zechariah who wrote a book in the Bible, but Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada the priest, who stood above the people and said to them, thus says God, why do you transgress the commandments of the Lord so that you cannot prosper? Because you have forsaken the Lord, he has forsaken you. Very corrective words. And what was the response? Did they listen and respond remorsefully, like David did when he was confronted by Nathan about his sin with Bathsheba? No, they just got irritated. Verse 21, so they, the leaders of Judah, who are now giving Joash bad advice, conspired against him. They conspired against Jehoiada's son Zechariah. And at the command of the king, Joash, they stoned him with stones in the court of the house of the Lord. Thus Joash the king did not remember the kindness which Jehoiada his father had done to him, but killed his son. And as he died, he, Zechariah, said, the Lord look on it and repay. Let God eventually bring about justice. Verse 23, so it happened in the spring of the year that the army of Syria came up against him, against Joash, and they came to Judah and Jerusalem. Before we finish the verse, we'll go back to 2 Kings 12 and fill in some extra information, because before coming against Jerusalem, 2 Kings 12, verse 17 says, Hazael, king of Syria, went up and fought against Gath, Gath city 20 or 30 miles to the southwest of Jerusalem, and took it. Then Hazael set his face to go up to Jerusalem. And Joash, king of Judah, took all the sacred things that his fathers, Jehoshaphat and Jehoram and Ahaziah, kings of Judah, had dedicated, and his own sacred things, and all the gold found in the treasuries of the house of the Lord and in the king's house, and sent them to Hazael, king of Syria. Then he, Hazael, went away from Jerusalem. Joash saw the Syrians coming, so he took valuables, including valuables out of the temple treasury, to pay off the Syrians, not to attack Jerusalem. And the Syrians left. Why fight if you're just going to give us this stuff, they probably thought. Now go back to 2 Chronicles 24, verse 23. Yes, the Syrians left Jerusalem, but apparently they returned a year later. And 2 Chronicles 24, in the middle of verse 23, they destroyed all the leaders of the people from among the people and sent all their spoil, more valuables, to the king of Damascus, Syria that is. 24, verse 24, for the army of the Syrians came with a small company of men, but the Lord delivered a very great army into their hand, because they had forsaken the Lord God of their fathers. A small band of Syrians overcame Judah's much larger army. They didn't rely on God for their protection. They relied on their riches. Joash tried to buy off the Syrians. Can you imagine David trying to do that? Of course not. Okay, we're in the middle of verse 24. So they, the Syrians, executed judgment, God's judgment, against Joash. And when they had withdrawn from him, withdrawn from Joash, for they left him severely wounded, his own servants conspired against him, because of the blood of the sons, or son, of Jehoiada the priest, and killed him. They killed Joash on his bed. So he died, and they buried him in the city of David, but they did not bury him in the tomb of the kings. The life of Joash provides us with multiple lessons. I'll mention a few. Lesson one, as much as possible, associate with and surround yourself with good people. People who respect God. People who will be a good influence on you. People who can help you make wise decisions. Remember that Proverbs 9, verse 10 says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. These are the people you want to get advice from. These are the people you want for support, for comfort, for encouragement when you need it. Second lesson, and this is kind of as we compare the age of Jehoiada, the priest, to the age of the advisors who came after him. Second lesson, other things being equal, always give deference to older rather than younger advisors. Other things being equal, always give deference to older rather than younger advisors. Unless it concerns technology. But when it comes to issues involving human relations, how to get along with people, listen to the older folks. Solomon's son Rehoboam is another good example of what not to do. When his father died and he became king, Rehoboam first went to the older men who served his father and asked them for their advice. How do I deal with these people? And they told him, if you're kind to the people and please them and speak good words to them, they'll be your servants forever. But then he consulted with the young men that he'd grown up with, his peers. And they told him just the opposite. Tell the people you're going to burden them even more than your father Solomon did. Whose advice did he follow? The young man. How well did that work out? Badly. Split the country apart. You should have listened to the old guys. So Josiah made some mistakes about who to surround himself with. and who to get advice from. But what was, Joash. But what was Joash's big overriding character flaw? What's the main lesson that the life of Joash presents us with? Going back to 2 Chronicles 24:2, it says, Joash did what was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. And when did things change? Verse 17, after the death of Jehoiada. Without Jehoiada, without strong godly leadership, Joash could not motivate himself to do what was right. Jehoiada had sheltered Joash physically as a small child, but he also sheltered Joash from bad advice as he grew older. Some might say that maybe Joash's problem was that he was too sheltered. I don't think so. Joash, to use an old expression, couldn't get by on his own steam. That was his fatal flaw. When Jehoiada died, Joash could no longer rely on Jehoiada's relationship with God. He had to rely on his own relationship with God. And all during the time that he was being sheltered, Joash had not been building on a personal relationship. Certainly not to the degree that King David did. David was constantly meditating on God, his laws, his ways. Just consider all the Psalms he wrote. The ability to get by on one's own steam is a phenomenon we sometimes see in the church. When a spouse leaves the church, the other may follow. When a parent leaves, a child may follow. Or perhaps it's the other way around. In one sense, though, none of us can get by on our own steam. We all need the help of God's Spirit. But Joash showed no spiritual initiative. Joash had not built a personal commitment to God's way of life. So when Jehoiada's protection was removed and he had to stand on his own personal convictions, Joash stumbled. He faced bad advice and false teaching, and he failed to resist it. He gave in to the pressure of those around him and even ordered a good man killed. Notice 1 Samuel 26, verse 7, and we'll compare him with David. David finds himself in a time of change, turmoil, and confusion. King Saul and his soldiers are hunting him and trying to kill him. David, at this point, and one of his trusted men sneak into Saul's camp at night. 1 Samuel 26, verse 7. So David and Abishai came to the people, Saul's people, by night, and there Saul lay sleeping within the camp with his spear stuck in the ground by his head. And Abner, Saul's bodyguard, and the people lay all around him, sound asleep. Verse 8, then Abishai said to David, God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Now, therefore, please let me strike him at once with a spear right to the earth, and I will not have to strike him a second time. Let's kill him right here and now. We've got the opportunity. Verse 9, but David said to Abishai, do not destroy him. For who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? David does not give in to advice that contradicts God's instruction. Brethren, we live in tumultuous times when things, as we have seen, can change quickly and in ways that we never could have imagined. And we know that even greater change is prophesied to happen. Are we prepared for this time of change? Are we prepared for a time when we may have to stand fully on our own, with nothing else to rely on except our own personal relationship with God? The prophet Amos writes of a time when there will be a famine of the word. Could that mean we may someday not have access to or the benefit of the ministry? This is, we know it today. How well would we manage without access to church leadership? How well would we do if our Jehoiada, so to speak, were to be removed from us? Let's remind ourselves of Philippians 2, verse 12. Because regardless of how prophecy eventually works out, we realize that we are each personally responsible, as Paul says, to work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. But notice the phrase in verse 12 that precedes the phrase that I just said. Philippians 2, verse 12. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, when I'm not there, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. 2 Peter 1, Peter lists a few of the traits we'll exhibit when we do indeed grow in our relationship with God and gain more of his divine nature. He lists faith, virtue, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, brotherly kindness, love. Now notice the wording in verse 10. 2 Peter 1, verse 10. Therefore, brethren, be even more diligent to make your call and election sure. For if you do these things, you will never stumble. Verse 11, for so an entrance will be supplied to you abundantly into the everlasting kingdom of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Joash had been called and chosen for a godly purpose, to restore the nation of Judah and to rule righteously over a physical kingdom. He was guided and helped along in the process. But when it came time for him to rule on his own, Joash had not made his calling and election sure. Do we see the parallel? Brethren, let's not make the same mistake. Let's be prepared for the times ahead and the purpose that God has called us to. Let's continually strengthen our personal relationship with God and avoid the fatal flaw of Joash.